Welcome back to Wellness in Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, a speaker, and a researcher. And I am joined here by my good friend, Dr. Martin Mendelson, your other host. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, a thought leader. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And today, we have a very important topic. This is what not to do as a dentist. And another way of saying this is, what are some of the biggest mistakes that we see that maybe we've made and that we've helped other doctors get through? So today's not going to be us telling you what to do. It's going to be telling you what not to do. Now, that may include what to do as well, but it's going to be very much, don't take that door. Don't take that door. Don't take that door. Oh, yeah, take that door right over there. And as we're recording this, in just a few months, we're going to be doing our Lightside Live program. That is where you get to hang out with us for 2 days, get 12 CE credits, and we go deep into wellness and dentistry, talking about practice management, talking about personal development, I mean, communication. It is just the most transformative course that Martin and I teach together, and we're super excited. So if you haven't signed up yet, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on links, and you'll find a link to our Lightside Live program. Martin, good to see you.
Good to see you as well. I'm excited for this topic to talk about what not to do. It's always a fun one, right?
Yeah. Why don't you talk about the first one?
Okay.
Oh, and hold on. Before we get started, we're going to do a few of these in order, but we're saving the best for last.
Yes.
Or maybe not the best. We're saving the most important for last.
Yes.
So make sure everybody listening or watching, make sure you stay to the end because yeah, it is a very important one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I'm excited for all of these, but that one in particular hits home for both of us very squarely. So I guess the first thing that we want to talk about relative to not to do is don't think that your team and your patients aren't watching you. And so don't be a leader you want to be a leader by example, not be a leader by what you say. So, you know, the old adage, you know, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
That's not what we want you to do. We want you to lead by example. And so your teams are watching your ethics. Your teams are watching how you interact with patients. Your teams are watching how much time you take off and the priorities mm-hmm. that you set with your family. And so, you know, you can't go through life, particularly as a leader with people who look up to you, doing as I say, not as I do, because that's not going to work because people are going to follow suit.
I try to do this so much with my kids.
Yeah.
And it's very challenging. And sometimes my wife doesn't like me talking to her about this too, because, you know, little things like we don't want the kids to eat this certain snack, right? Mm-hmm. But if we as the adults eat it in front of them, yep, and they say, well, you're eating it. And it's like, well, I'm the adult, right?
Right.
And there's some things like that that are understandable, but it's just so much easier if it's just not there, right? If it's just they never see it.
Yeah.
And totally. I think that it's like that with our team too. One of the interesting things is that after I went through burnout and my partner Matt and I were starting to get really healthy, going to the gym, preparing our meals on Sundays, coming with prepared meals, we were starting to look good, we were starting to feel good, we never said anything to our team. But guess what happened? They stopped going out for fast food. They started bringing in their own meals. They started going to the gym. They started feeling better. They started looking better. And it was so funny that you think like, oh, they're just my staff, right? But they're looking up to you to lead them. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but similarly how children need to have a leader, or even how dogs want to have structure and want to have a leader, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're a dog owner, a dog lover.
Yes.
It's the same way. You see people that have quote unquote bad dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They're bad dog parents, in my
exactly.
opinion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think similarly this happens in the dental office.
Yeah. And you know, there's a part of leadership that we also need to address, which is vulnerability, because we are all human beings and we're not going to be perfect. And, you know, we're sitting here saying we need to lead by example. Well, sometimes we mess up in being the example, and that's actually okay because you did it. You're human. You can't take it back. And so that actually gives an opportunity for, depending whatever the situation is, to be like, hey, you know, I'm not proud of how I handled that. This is the way that I'd like to handle this in the future. This is why I don't believe this was the best way that I could have handled it in this situation. And so I'm going to make a commitment to myself, to you, whomever, to kind of move forward in a different way. And so it's not about perfection. It's more about honesty, transparency, and doing the right thing the first time. And if for whatever reason we don't do that right thing the first time, to own up, be vulnerable, and to set that example. Because that level of vulnerability and admission to a team member can actually go farther than anything else.
Yeah, I love that you said that too. And I think I made a lot of those mistakes as a leader in my practice. Was I didn't show the vulnerability that I should have. Mm-hmm. And I know that the best leaders that I've had that have kind of led me have been fairly vulnerable. And also some of the leaders that I'm thinking of have been very willing to take feedback too. So for example, they will say, like, for example, there were certain leaders in different companies or businesses that I've been in that will say, that will be doing a review on me. Right. Mm-hmm. So this is what you did right. This is what mm-hmm. you did wrong. You know, we could improve on this. We could improve on this. And they always ended it with, and I'd love to hear how I could improve as well.
Yep. Yeah.
And coming from someone who is, you know, the higher up, I think that's really respectful and it breeds safety.
Oh, 100%.
Communication.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. You know, I was talking to somebody recently who used to work for me at Spear. And we were personal friends. We are personal friends, and they're very complimentary of my leadership style. But the interesting thing was, she said to me, she said, not only did you understand my job, she said, when there were things that didn't go right, you owned up to them and you learned from them and you shared with us how you learned from that. So that conversation just happened like 3-4 weeks ago, and it kind of really struck me because I never thought about it that way before, but it's something that's important to me. If I mess up or if I misstep and it can help somebody else in some way, then I'm going to own up to it and talk about it. And that person really saw it. So
I also liked what you said about ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Because this happens in the dental office, right? The patient calls, whatever. Well, just tell them that,
yeah.
You know, The lab didn't get it back in time, right?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Just, and it's like these little lies, I think it shows some of your ethics. And over time, then your team starts to see, oh, well, you know, we can lie here. We can lie here. We can cheat here. And I think I'm glad that you said that, because I didn't think about that when you first mentioned this topic.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
think about ethics. I thought more about, you know, cleaning up after yourself or that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I, you know, one of the things I've come to say over the years is, you know, if you always tell the truth, you never have to remember anything. And so you never have to remember the mistruth. You know, I actually have a friend, an associate dentist who was let go from a practice recently, and the owner doctor told this individual one thing and they were telling patients something else. And it came around pretty quickly what the real story was, which, you know, bit the owner doctor in the you know what for not being truthful. And so if you never lie, you don't have to remember anything because you got nothing to hide. So do as I do, not as I say.
Yes. And are there any specific examples before we go on to another topic? Are there any specific examples you want to give on that?
I think it's well, I think one of the biggest ones within practice is how you say what it is you say. And so modeling that communication behavior so that your team can pick up on certain nuances and phrases and idioms to help them be better communicators. And frankly, that's a two-way street. with you picking up from your team as well. Because a lot of times somebody else is going to say something better than we had come up with. And why not own that, thank them for it, and move forward? So I think verbal communication is huge. I think the completeness with which we finish tasks, whether those are chart notes or how we leave the lab or whatnot, don't be that doctor that goes into the lab like a tornado, leaves it a wreck, and then comes in and barks that the team left it in disarray. Now, granted, I'm not talking about going to the lab between a patient, needing to do something and coming back and getting it later. We all know that's not what I'm talking about. But don't be that tornado and hold your team to a different standard, right? Because that's not going to work either. So I think that'd be another
Yeah. When you were saying that, I was thinking of reactivity. I think one of the big mistakes
one.
that I made was being fairly reactive between the stimulus and the response. And I think when you can control your emotions, it will allow your team to then control their emotions as well.
100%, 100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the next one that I'd like to go off is not what you and I talked about beforehand. Okay.
Uh-oh.
But I'd like to go off of this one. Being a good clinical dentist will make you successful. So that is the misbelief. Okay. So if we're going to tell people what not to do, my advice, and maybe you would agree with me, would be don't spend 100% of your time on becoming a better clinical dentist. Now, before we go further, I want to make sure people aren't misinterpreting what I'm saying. Yes, you need to have standard of care. Yes, you want to be good at your craft. And of course, you want to learn how to do your margins better and place your implants better and treatment plan and learn from Frank Spear and John Coyce and all the best treatment planners in the world. Yes, you want to do all that stuff. However, you have to leave a certain percentage for other skills.
100%.
Because you and I know these dentists that are incredible clinical dentists. I mean, 1% of the 1%. However, they are miserable.
Yes.
Some of them are miserable. They are miserable. They can be, going through divorce. They can be in poor health. They can have, litigation with patients or practice partners. I mean, just because you're a great clinical dentist doesn't mean you're going to be happy, and it doesn't mean you're going to be successful when you talk about a holistic success.
Oh, 100%. And in fact, I didn't even think about this when we were kind of doing our pregame here. It's not only that you shouldn't only focus on clinical stuff. You shouldn't only focus on clinical and practice management stuff. That's important too, but the things that you and I teach and live and breathe and embody, the mindset stuff is incredibly important. And so I talk about this idea of dental dualism, which is this. It's the idea that all we need to do is focus on clinical and practice management topics and we'll be successful. That's hogwash. I
Yeah.
mean, dualism was coined as a phrase coined by René Descartes in 1641. That's a long time ago. That states the mind and body are separate. And so that's just totally been debunked. To even say that is laughable because it's been so debunked that what we think up here affects everything. What we say between our lips, what we do between our fingers, and how we end up navigating through our lives. In fact, if you want to see an example of this, go to my website. There's that 8-minute video clip from Spotlight on Speaking, and the whole topic is dental dualism. So you can see more about this. But I've seen this over the years, having been full-time at Spear for well over a decade, and there are these dentists that just live and breathe clinical dentistry. We had a whole episode on Are You Addicted to Dentistry? And I will reiterate what you said. It's not that we're saying you shouldn't pursue excellence in clinical dentistry. It's not that you shouldn't take courses on it, but please don't make that the sole focus of all of your learning, because our mindset and our how we look at things and how we filter things will guide our success as much as clinical prowess that we're looking so hard to seek.
Yeah, and I like what you said. You said don't just focus on clinical and practice management. That's even more advanced than I think most dentists are. I mean, most of us just focus on clinical. Then you have
That's true.
people that are also focusing on practice management or maybe the business. Which I think is very important. I mean, of course, if you're an owner, if you're an
Yeah.
associate, not as much, but I think it's important to understand the business model so that you can have some understanding for the leader or the practice
Yeah.
owner or the DSO that you work for or anything like that. But even that, it's not only clinical, it's not only practice management, but it's also health and purpose and balance. And communication and boundaries and expectations. And what's funny is for me, I did both. I did a lot of clinical, 90% clinical. I did do some practice management training as well that I learned a lot from. Specifically, I did a lot of stuff with Scott Luna, and I didn't do anything on the other stuff. And I think the place to incorporate a lot of that is in the practice management space. Because a lot of what I teach is, I like to say practice management, not to make more money, but to be happier, to be more comfortable in your practice. Now, the result is usually you make more money, you work less, but that's not what I promise. I promise people, let's master your mental and relational health so that you can do this for a long time, so you can have sustainable success. Now, I would hope that the result is you work less and you make more money, because that is one aspect of happiness, right? Is financial success. But I don't come in saying I'm going to grow your business like how most practice management gurus would say. But I love incorporating practice management with communication, because that's where you talk about staff management. That's where you talk about case acceptance. That's where you talk about financial arrangements. And a lot of those aspects are through good communication.
No, absolutely. And how you establish trust. I came back yesterday from a practice in New Hampshire, and we started the process, and we're going to follow this up over Zoom, where we're going to talk about the four elements of trust from the book, The Thin Book of Trust. And it's a fascinating thing, because you're talking about communication, and they talk about care, they talk about reliability, they talk about competence, and they talk about sincerity. And it was interesting when we were in this practice, and I said, stand next to that competence, or that, excuse me, that pillar. I was trying to find the word, that pillar that you most align with. And everybody stood next to care, which isn't a bad thing. That's a great thing, right? But I think when it comes to communication, and I don't want to go too off far off tangent, but when it comes to communication and trust, is it that somebody didn't do what they said when they said they were going to do it? Is that somebody didn't do it to a given level? Is it that, there's different ways we can interpret how people complete actions, and then that guides how we can then communicate back to them relative to not, I don't now trust you, but okay, let's talk about what happened. You committed to do X and you didn't, or you said you were going to do it this way and you didn't. So trust is not this umbrella, it's a multifaceted thing. So focusing only on the clinical, you would miss that part, because that's all about communication, interaction, leadership, all the above.
I think now, knowing what I know about communication, and by no means am I a guru, but I have put, now like 6 years of effort into learning these techniques, I feel so much more comfortable where I am. Whether that's in a practice, whether that's, talking with neighbors or talking with my kids or my spouse or my friends or my family, it's a life skill. And you and I like to talk about it specifically to dental practitioners, because that's really our specialty and that's who our audience is. But once you learn this, it applies everywhere.
Oh, 100%. I mean, every single time I give a keynote presentation or a workshop, I will get multiple people coming up, being very kind and thank you, et cetera. But every single time I get multiple comments around, I'm not just going to use this for my team. I'm going to use this with my spouse. I'm going to use this with my kids every single time. And it doesn't matter the profession to whom I'm speaking. I got the same response from speaking to a subsidiary of United Healthcare as I did at the California Dental Association or to Iva Klar's North American sales meeting. This stuff relative to communication, mindset, happiness, leadership, it's universal and ubiquitous to every humanistic interaction you have. And so I believe, and you and I have talked about this many times, that dentists just forget that dentists are people and people are dentists.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not unique. We're human beings that happen to train on, you know, a disease prevention and disease care of the mouth. That's just what we chose to do. That's it.
Yeah. And I think the reason why so many dentists get into this problem is because when you look at our training, like you're just talking about in dental school, it's all clinical.
Mm-hmm.
It's all clinical.
Yep.
And they don't teach us any of this.
Nope.
And so I think when we get out, we think, well, I just need to do more of that, right? I need to take more CEs on veneers and margin and digital dentistry. And again, all of that is important and it's virtuous and it's good for your patient and for your team, but it just can't be 100%.
So isn't it ironic what you just did? I don't even think you realize what you just did. The first thing we said not to do is don't do as I say, not as I do, right? So what happens in dental school? They don't teach us any of that stuff. And what do? We do what we were taught.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, so we've talked about do not think that your team is not watching.
Yep.
You as a leader.
Yep.
We also said, don't think that just being a good clinical dentist will make you have sustainable success. All right. What do you think about number three? What's number three for you?
So one of my favorites, don't think your thoughts don't matter. Right.
Okay. Expand.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, we could spend hours on this one, but we're not going to. So the way we think and the way we process the events and the incidences that comprise any given day literally make our brain function more or less effectively. And so let's just use the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon or frequency bias as an example. You come to the office and, you know, you come in and you got a small leak in one of the water lines and you have a mini flood. Then, you know, one of your team members calls out. Then your first patient is a bit of a challenge. And you say to yourself, I'm having a bad day. And then the rest of the day, you're looking for those negative things to prove to yourself that you're having a bad day. And so it's the same as a new car phenomenon. You buy a new car and you see the same make and model vehicle everywhere. So the way we think actually affects our brain function. And so when we're thinking I'm having a bad day, you then focus on negativity and you negate the positive stuff. Not to mention that positivity has been shown by Brian and Schmidt and others to affect cognitive ability, the ability to assimilate and process facts, and believe it or not, your visual acuity, what you actually see, as well as even, guess what, your peripheral vision. So don't think that sitting there thinking to yourself, I'll go extreme, I hate this, my team doesn't appreciate me, all my patients are a pain in the you know what today, my family doesn't, I mean, that's an extreme. But I want people to understand that mindset matters and the thoughts that we tell ourselves will impact how we actually navigate through each and every day. And in the words of Michael Singer, who wrote The Untethered Soul, you are not the thoughts in your head, you're the one who hears them. If you would take the thoughts out of your brain and pretend that another human being is saying those same things to you, if you would, you know, haul off and slap them for saying those kind of horrible things, then why are we doing it to ourselves? So that was a long-winded answer. So sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm trying to think because some of this mindset stuff can sound fluffy and woo-woo to a lot of us scientists, right? I mean, we are scientists, but there's so much research on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's been studied so much. What kind of real world example can you give? I mean, I know you gave one about waking up and everything is bad, but can you give another example of don't think your thoughts don't matter and how they impact you? Maybe something dental specific.
Yeah, I'll give you two that are dental adjacent. Well, no, they would be dental specific. So Schmitz worked with individuals primed to be positive and primed to be negative, and he showed them photographs, the same photographs. Those that were primed to be positive were able to, in a time limit, describe the primary image in the foreground and a lot of detail in the background. Those that were primed to be negative only saw the primary image in the foreground and missed a lot of detail in the background. So patient comes in, mesial-incisal chip on number 9, and you just go, oh, I'll fix it, versus taking a step back and thinking, why did this fracture? Why did this break? That's a very specific dental example. I'll give you another one. Brian worked with school children, and he split the groups in two. Each group were equally academically weighted, high, middle, and low performers. And they were about to take a standardized math test. One group just simply took the test without anything else. And the other group, they sat down and they talked about the happiest day in their lives. What did they do? Who were they with? How did it make them feel? And then they're like, great, thanks. Now go take your test. The group that was primed to be positive blew the doors off the other group that just simply took the test. And so going in with a positive mindset allows our brains, our cognitive abilities to improve. And that's just one of many studies. The only other thing I want to say about this is there's a lot of other research around how small bursts of positivity matter. This is not walking around with a smile on your face, good vibes only. That's toxic positivity in a whole nother episode. This is about short bursts of positivity and how short bursts of positivity actually affect your brain's function. So those are two very specific examples.
I love the example that you gave about the incisal chip on, a central incisor, and you fix it, and the patient's mad at you because it came off, and you fix it again because you feel like you need to do it for free, and then you're kind of pissed off about that because you're like, God, I just worked for free, and but I don't want to feel bad, and I don't want to get a bad review. And a lot of that, of course, comes back to setting expectations and communications and boundaries with the patient. But I've seen this so many times. I mean, with people that have taken my clinical courses, and they come and they show me cases, and they've got radiographs and photographs, and they say, I just don't know what's happening here. The implant keeps losing bone, or the screw keeps coming loose, and they're not taking into account what is happening in the entire system of the mouth, right? And I never would have connected that to my thoughts or to positive mindset. So I love how you did that. And that is a great way of showing it. You just went off. There we go. I'm back. That is such a great way of showing it. I really like that example, and I never thought about that.
So I'll give you another one. There's another theory by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson called the broaden and build theory, which states that positive thought action repertoires broaden our brain's ability to function. So the example I give when I talk about this is, how many times have you been in a situation when you come out of it, a negative situation, when you come out of it, you think, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I say that? Why didn't that occur to me? That's broaden and build theory in action, where we have our fight or flight engaged. We have negativity engaged. We become tunnel vision within the situation. For example, and to extend that, if we haven't been trained in open-ended questions and the three types of listening that I teach, you're thinking what it is you're going to say next versus listening and wanting to ask the next question to clarify. And so it narrows our ability to actually soak in information, to then process the information, to then come up with alternative, in our case, treatment plans or treatment modalities, treatment options, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I'm thinking of this situation that happened recently where my wife, well, my whole family and I, we were at a restaurant, and my daughter was kept hitting her head. It was like the seat was too tall. So then she would stand up and then she'd hit her head on the back and then she would cry. And we were surrounded by a bunch of people in their 70s and 80s. And at some point, they started giving us bad looks and it turned into a little bit of an argument. And I think back, why didn't I say this? Why didn't I say this? Why didn't I say this? And you just explained it so well. Like, I wasn't thinking rationally. I wasn't thinking between the stimulus and the response. And I would have loved to have handled it a little bit differently. But I think it's because I was having these negative thoughts about people.
It's pretty wild, and that it's not the focus of today, but often then people ask the next question, well, how do we handle that? How do we deal with it? And the answer is learning more about different types of listening, learning about how to respond with open-ended questions, learning about how to be present and curious in a situation. And one of my favorite books, Crucial Conversations, and the framework that they have within there that you can lean on when you're feeling yourself go into that space, you can basically distract yourself. You get out of this amygdala hijack situation by focusing on the framework to then start with facts and go from there. So
Yeah,
there's method.
so much of it is awareness. You and I have been on this positive psychology and personal development journey for many years, and just having that awareness is so powerful. It's like before I was on this personal development journey, I never thought that there was any type of framework to any communication. Literally, I thought it was just, oh, I'll say this, and then they'll say something else, and then I'll say this. And when you start learning some of these frameworks, it's so much power. It's so much
Absolutely.
control. And two, a lot of it is getting uncomfortable, being in uncomfortable situations, which is the same reason why I do jiu-jitsu. That's what one of my coaches says, is when you are comfortable being uncomfortable, for example, having a grown man on top of you holding you down, if you get comfortable in that situation, then you don't have the amygdala hijack and you think, oh, okay, well, I'll just trap his foot and I'll grab his hand and I'll turn him over and that's it. Instead of, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly. Say
So it's the same thing. So much of it is awareness and practice.
that again.
So much of it is awareness and practice.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about our last thing not to do. And that is thinking that the answer to your problems is working harder and longer forever. And so let me expand on that. There are times in your career, there are times in your life where you have to hustle, where you may have to stay up late, you may have to work long hours, you may be exhausted, and know that that's okay. However, this is not something you can do in perpetuity. And dentists make this mistake all the time. And I am here holding my hand up for nobody, for people that aren't watching the video, that this was me. And I don't think we can blame our dental colleagues and or ourselves if you are one of these dentists, because we've been grinding since high school. You had to do well in high school to get into college. You couldn't be that screw off and, get all D's and just kind of whatever, right? And then in college, I know all the people that went to dental school or medical school, they were the only people I ever saw in the library. All the people that were doing all the other things, they were never studying, they were partying and they were doing this. So you're grinding in college, even though you may have had a good time. And of course, you went to some parties and whatnot. And then dental school comes. And guess what? You're there on the weekends doing wax ups, and then you drop your full denture setup and you have to redo it at 2 in the morning before your test tomorrow. And you are grinding. So you get into this feeling of that's all you know. You've been grinding, hustling in college. You've been grinding, hustling in dental school, and maybe a few years of high school too. I mean, this is 10 years of your life that you've been grinding. And then you get out of school and you go, gosh, I'm just an associate right now. I need to really grind and I need to learn. I need to learn how to talk to patients and I need to learn how to prep a tooth faster and I need to learn implants and I need to learn full mouth rehabilitation and I need to go to Spear and I need to go to Coice and oh my gosh, grind, grind, grind. Next thing you know, you're 7 to 15 years out and you've never had time off. Now you may be married, you may have kids, you may have a practice, and you've just been grinding forever. And I'm a car guy and I relate this back to cars. If you get a brand new car, for people that know me, I'm a Porsche fanatic. So let's say you buy a brand new Porsche and you just redline it as long as you can. Every turn, you're going around the corner, squealing the tires, everything is redlining. The engine is going to blow up. Now, you can do that for a little bit. You know, they're race cars for the street, but you can't do that for 5 years, for 10 years, for 15 years. There is a breaking point. And so the problem that I see with dentists is that we just grind until we have a breakdown. And we need to know that you can grind in small chunks, but it can't be an extended period.
And I think that social media has helped and hindered all at the same time because, truth be told, there's a lot of people that will only show their beautiful cases. And so comparison's the thief of joy. And you sit there and go, my cases don't look like that. How am I going to do better? Oh, I'm going to take another course or I'm going to work harder, et cetera. But by the same token, there's a lot of people like you, because you have great social media presence, that show time with their family and time away, et cetera, et cetera. You know, one of my friends, Jennifer, she's got a great private practice in Kansas. She, you know, is involved in CE and she helps teach, but she also posts all about her now they're all mostly adult children and, you know, going away to the lake with them and so forth. And so I think maybe social media has benefited us a little bit relative to that, showing not just the cases, but also the time of the Bahamas or whatever else. But, you know, we have a mutual friend that, you know, didn't take time off for like 20 years that was in Lightside. So it's a challenge. And, you know, it's you just can't keep going. I think your Porsche example is brilliant. I have nothing to add there. It makes total sense. And so, you know, you can't burn the candle at both ends. And, you know, you can't write a check for tomorrow and you never know what's going to happen. And gosh forbid you get ill, or you have some kind of tragedy, or, you know, like me, you go to Mexico and all of a sudden you get embroiled in a drug cartel shootout and, you know, it really kind of it helps you reevaluate your
That's
life.
a real story for people listening, by the way. That's not an
It's a real
exaggeration.
story. It's not hyperbole. It's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because I really got a wake-up call. So taking time off is important. And didn't we talk about this in one of the other episodes? There's ways to plan to take the time off. And so if you tell me I can't take time off because I'll lose production, immediately I know one thing. You do not have a yearly plan and you do not have ideas, concrete ideas
You may
about,
not know your daily production, your hourly production,
all that
your
stuff.
overhead, all that kind of stuff.
All that stuff. So can't
I think the
rent.
hardest part for dentists is because we get into this, what is the word? We get into this feeling of being busy is being productive. So even if you have a dentist that knows they can take off financially, they feel like a loser or unproductive if I'm going to take a week off. It's like we equate busyness with success, maybe.
Well, I'll even go one further that we equate, or we do not equate, rest and recuperation with value. We do not give credit or acceptance to the idea that we are a biological machine that requires rest. And without that rest, just like your Porsche example, it will break down. Or let's just argue for somebody listening and go, well, I haven't broken down. Well, I would be willing to bet you that you're not as efficient as you could be with rest. You're not as present as you could be. You're not as emotionally stable as you could be. Or let me say, emotionally, you're more emotionally reactive. Like you can't make that as a cogent argument because it's just not true. It's
Well,
just
we have the research to show, for example, people that are going through burnout are doing 8 hours of work in 10 hours of work.
Yep.
So then, going back to my car example, you're really spinning your wheels and not
Yeah.
going anywhere.
A hundred
And
percent.
so you may be grinding more and more and more and being less and less and less efficient.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think the hard part with dental professionals is that we love the feeling of accomplishment, and I am addicted to accomplishment. Yeah, I really am. And I
Yeah.
think I was taught a lot of that in dental school. I mean, I think some of that is inside of me just from a child, but I've been taught that, I love taking a big decayed tooth, cleaning it out, going like slow round burr, getting it down to sound dentin, and then you kind of feel the dentin, it's nice and hard, and then you
Yeah.
seal the dentin. I mean, there's something so satisfying about
Yeah.
that. And that is that accomplishment. You can like look at something and say, wow, I did that, right?
And the other thing I'll say too, you talk about accomplishment and checking off the boxes and stuff. And I'm speaking specifically to the owners or those docs that are in leadership positions. And I invite you to write this down, docs, or anybody listening who's elite in a leadership position. And here's what I challenge you to write down. There will always be work to do. And if you own that statement, you will be on your way to being able at the end of a given day to leave and focus on your family and friends.
But I have to say that I still struggle with that.
Yeah, me too.
And I can't remember who the author was. It's the author of Deep Work, Cal Newport, I think is his name. And he says that work fills the time that you allot it to fill.
Yes.
And I still struggle with that.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
still struggle with that. Like, if I don't have something for 2 hours, I may go on my computer and try to figure out what can I do, because I want that feeling of accomplishment. And I may get one little thing done here or catch up on some emails, but I will make it fill that 2 hours
Yeah.
when it may be 20 minutes that of actual work that I did. And I still struggle with that. And
It's really,
I need to, sorry to interrupt you. I
yeah.
need to listen to what you're saying more. There's always work to be done. However, when I close the laptop, you give the example, when you lock the office,
Yeah,
right?
yeah,
When you lock your
yeah,
practice at the end, if you're the last one,
yeah.
you need to walk out of your practice knowing, oh no, we probably should have poured that model. And, oh, that there's that note that I forgot to write.
Yeah.
But you need to have some kind of, no, I'm missing the word today, but some kind of feeling that it's okay that
Yeah.
not everything is done.
How about boundary, my friend?
Yeah, this is a self boundary,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. I mean, look, shameless plug for my life and leadership course that I'm about to come out with, but this is at the heart of why I created it, because what I help people do is take an inventory of everything that's on their plate so that they can actually organize it and categorize it based on importance so that at the end of the day, it's not, oh no, it's not that everything's done, but that everything's accounted for. And so you know what needs to be done. I'm not saying that everything gets done, but you at least have a system to account for everything, which by default lowers your stress in and by itself. Because instead of locking that door and going, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do, you lock the door and go, yeah, you know what? I have a lot of work to do, but it's all in my system. I'm good.
Yeah, or you have the priorities. You say, yeah, I have a lot of work to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to get this done. I'm going to call
Yeah.
this patient, and I'm going to talk to my lab technician about that one case. Boom, boom, boom.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
it's not the hundreds of things that may have to happen
Exactly.
because you've prioritized it based on a lot of what we talked about
Correct. Correct.
in other podcasts. Okay, last one. And for everybody that's listening, this is the most important one.
Yep.
Do not align your purpose in life with dentistry. I'm going to say it one more time. Do not align your purpose in life with dentistry. And listen, I get it. I was here. I did the same thing. I thought my purpose in life was to be the best dentist in the world. And it sounds so silly coming out of my mouth now. Now, you may think, well, what's wrong with that? Like, I want to be a great dentist. I didn't say that. What I said was, don't align your purpose in life with your profession, especially a profession like ours, where you're bound to have some quote unquote failures. The tooth may get sensitive. The crown may fracture. The implant may fail. The denture may get a sore spot. The patient may be pissed off. The patient thinks you're charging too much. These are these small little micro failures that if you align your purpose in life with your profession, then your whole self-worth goes down the drain with those failures. And then you think, well, gosh, I spent 12 years of my life to get here. I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on schooling. I took all this CE. I own this practice. What am I doing this for? I'm not even that good at it. And that's when, unfortunately, we lose
It's
colleagues.
yeah, and it's I hope no one ever has to go through the disablement, I'll call it what it is, nightmare that I went through. I'm not unique. There are many disabled dentists. However, all of our journeys are unique, regardless of disablement or not. And truly having my identity ripped away from me was extremely traumatic. And through therapy, I realized later was trauma because I identified who I was with what I did. And when that was taken away, I didn't know what to do. And this is a real thing, folks. Whether it's refusing to take time off because you keep grinding, or it's the traumatic reaction to having your profession taken away from you for due to disablement, whatever it is, like I couldn't agree with you more. Do not align your purpose in life with dentistry. You are a human being that chose to train in the profession of dentistry. Period. End of story.
Yes. And I don't want people to misunderstand this. You can love dentistry. You can be
Amen.
passionate about dentistry. You can be good at dentistry, but it's not who you are at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's not what your friends are going to remember you by. It's not what your kids are going to remember you by. It's hopefully not what your parents are going to be proud of you for. They're going to be proud of
Yes.
you for the person you are and the character that you have and helping others and, those type of things. So just think of the most important people in your life that may have passed, maybe your parents and maybe your grandparents and maybe friends or colleagues. I hope you're not saying, wow, they were a incredible truck driver. They really built the greatest homes if they were a home builder, for example. And similarly, I would hope that your children and your spouses and all these people, when you're gone, do not say, wow, Dr. Stanley did the best margins on veneers. It sounds silly, right, when I say it. And that's what you need to get across, is that you want these people to say, wow, Martin helped so many people. He was such a great friend. When I was going through hard times, I knew I could call him. He was great to animals, like little things like that. I mean, that's who you are, not what you
Absolutely.
do.
It's you were making me think, because I thought you were going to go there, but you didn't. But it's like the tombstone exercise that we do in Lightside Live, right? And what do you want to be remembered for? I don't think, I could be wrong, because stranger things have happened, but how many tombstone exists where it says, they were a great whatever, and their profession is there. It's husband, father, or wife and mother, sister, brother, aunt, uncle. That's the important stuff, right? Not to say dentistry isn't important, but yet at the same time, if that's what we make the totality of our identity connected to, that's where we can run into challenges.
Well, I think this has been a great discussion. Let's do a quick review of things not to do in dentistry. Okay. So, do not think that your team is not watching you as an example. Don't think that your thoughts don't matter. Don't think that being a good clinical dentist will make you successful. Do not work harder and longer forever to think that that's going to solve your problems. And lastly, and most importantly, do not align your purpose in life or your identity with dentistry. So, if you guys got something out of this discussion today, It would really, really help us if you wrote us a review on whatever platform you're listening. And also send it to a colleague, send it to a friend. I know if Martin sends me a podcast or a book or a website or something like this, I listen to it. Just the other day, one of my friends sent me a podcast. I put it above all of my other podcasts to listen to. Okay, so this would really help us. This helps us grow the show, take more time and effort for the show. And lastly, if you haven't signed up for Lightside Live, that's our 2-day workshop, come hang out with us and go deeper into all these topics on mastering wellness and dentistry. It's in Irvine, California on November 1st and 2nd at GlideWell, one of the biggest labs in the world. And we would love to see you, if, especially if it's cold where you live. Come to Southern California where you can go to the beach in November. I mean, well, maybe we'll go to the beach together. Okay. So thanks everybody for listening. You can go to wellnessanddentistry.com to find everything you need, whether it's Lightside Live, whether it's our links, our coaching, our courses. And we really thank you for listening today. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.